to afford passage back, so I took employment with a likely-looking group of soldiers. Sure, I nodded. I liked her, and not just because she was beautiful.
I thought you were against melodrama, muttered Oreg.
This is strange, Bestia said with abrupt seriousness. I would never have thought to end up here, so far from home. Cholites are forbidden to leave the tower. Some of them walk around with a permanent glow from talking to the goddess, but I never felt her. The potions that were given to help us reach her never worked on me. The Cholan was very upset because I did neither the goddess nor the tower any good. Underneath the stiffness, I heard shame. Oreg snorted. Drugged the lot of you so they could siphon your powers. You don't need drugs for the gods to touch you. Ask the ascetics at Minog. They have Athervon's power. Enough to crisp the Acolyte Tower, and their people aren't drained husks after a year's apprenticeship. I cleared my throat, hoping Bestia, Avenhell born, didn't know much Talvinish history.
Minog? The ruin outside of Estien? I was told it was destroyed in the Reformation Wars several hundred years ago, and Athervon's order with it.
There was a long silence. Then Oreg said, I'm something of a historian. Sometimes I think I live more closely to the past than the present. Of course, she accepted it. The truth was much less believable.
How did you two meet? Asked Bestia after a moment. Axiel and Penrod don't know you. You're too young to be as good a wizard as you are. Even the Cholan couldn't teleport herself without a complicated ceremony, and you do it in the blink of an eye.
I assumed she was talking to Oreg, as I hadn't teleported myself anywhere. Oreg's one of the family, I said.
Bastard, confirmed Oreg truthfully enough. I'm older than I look. There was this spell, his voice trailed off, then started up again briskly. I decided I wanted to see the family estates. It was easy to get in without anyone knowing, but Ward and his sister found me out.
He lied as well as I did. Use as much of the truth as you can to give the wrong impression. Perhaps it was something in the blood. The night was still dark when I awoke to a touch on my shoulder, and Penrod kneeling beside me. I rolled to my feet with as little noise as I could and gathered my sword. I followed him into the woods and back to the rise I'd occupied earlier, where Oreg was waiting. I saw immediately what he'd brought me to see. Not a half mile away was the unmistakable orange glow of a campfire.
Have you checked it out? I asked.
Penrod shook his head.
Stay here. I'll take a look, but you keep watch. If you see a scuffle, wake the others.
Walking quietly in the woods is difficult. Doing it in the dead of night with nothing but the light of the moon proved impossible. I was fairly sure that unless the campers were deaf or asleep, they knew I was approaching before I got there. There was only a single figure visible in the camp. He was wrapped in a thin cloak and perched on a large rock in front of the fire with his back to me. There was only one bedroll.
I thought it'd be safer if you found me than if I tried to ride all the way to your camp, said my brother conversationally, though I was fairly sure he couldn't see me where I crouched under a nearby tree.
Staring into the fire is bad for your night vision, I commented without approaching closer. I couldn't imagine what Tostin was doing here.
I don't want to study with the Harpers and Estien, he said. I don't want to be a cooper. I don't want to work as the entertainment for an inn. Most especially, I don't want Hurok.
His voice was tight with strain.
I'm sorry, Ward. If not for you, I'd be buried in the hillside with the rest of our ancestors who took the easy way out of this life.
I sighed, stepped out so the light of the fire made me visible to his eyes as he was the mine.
Don't fret, I said. You don't know me well.
Not really. Just enough to know I'm not as stupid as you thought me. I fed a small stick to his fire. Tostin had only known what I'd shown him. Our midnight ride to Terfanic several years ago had been only slightly less dramatic than the confrontation last night. He'd been weak from loss of blood, and I'd been in a hurry. There hadn't been time to talk. It wasn't his fault that when I looked at him, I saw the cheerful hellion he'd been as a toddler, while he saw a stranger who looked like our father. I spoke again. Father would have done it. Would have killed you for standing in his way.
As he tried to kill you.
Tostin's voice was soft, non-judgmental. Some Orinstonians stopped at the tavern today. They were cursing a ship that had already sailed. The older one, the dangerous one, said he'd send a man to Newtonburn,
but the likelihood was that you, he used your name, were gone. He said Cyrnak would have to accept money to replace his slave. It would cost more money than they can afford, and the money would come out of the younger man's inheritance. Does that sound right? I nodded, glad to turn to less painful subjects. What did you do, spy upon them?
No.
I played for them. Likely that everyone heard them for a block, at least the younger man. He was vociferous about his objections to spending the rest of the year in Buril, wherever that is. Buril is Garanon's estate in Ornstone. Landislaw, his younger brother, is court-raised, though. He'll view it as the far side of nowhere. I'd intended on avoiding Buril, but it was good to know for certain. I outlined the events that led to my escape in as few words as I could.
So what do you intend to do now? Tostin asked, the firelight shifting over his face so I could not read his expression.
I'm going to fight a war with Vorsag and Ornstone. Tostin, like Axiel, merely nodded, leading me to question his sanity, too.
It might work. War heroes are hard to dispose of neatly.
There was no doubt in his voice that I'd be a hero.
So I thought, I agreed.
Tostin tucked his head down, hair falling over his face.
I would like to go with you.
It was guilt. He'd hurt my feelings and wanted to make up for it.
Go learn from the minstrels in Estien, I said. I have enough fighters.
I'm good, Ward, you know that.
He was. Oh, not like Father and me. His technique was speed and agility, not strength, but that made him no less deadly, no matter what Father had said.
Tostin would strengthen our party. 5 fighters and a sorceress with only Ciara to guard.
If you want to help me, I could use you in Estien, I said. I need somewhere safe for the brat.
His face came up and I saw the same stubborn look that Ciara had.
I'll not go to Estien. You don't have to let me travel with you, but I'll follow. Don't forget, I have plenty of money to travel.
I closed my eyes. There were many reasons to welcome him and only one to send him away. I didn't want to put my brother in danger. I'd take a look at the situation in Ornstone. If it looked too bad, I'd send him away with Ciara. He'd go if it was to protect the brat.
Get your bedroll, I said. You might as well camp with us now.
I helped him put the fire out and gather his things. When dawn came, I called everyone together. Ciara sat near Tostin, occasionally patting his face as if to reassure herself that he was really there. Tostin kept sliding unobtrusive glances at Oreg.
From now on, I said, we are a team. We work together, helping each other if we can. Every morning we'll train. For today, Axiel will teach Oreg, Bastia, Ciara, and Tostin.
Axiel, I continued, I don't know how much Oreg and Bastia know. Ciara is a beginner, and Tostin, you remember, is very good at knives and hand-to-hand. Penrod and I will work out together. In the evening, I'll work out with Axiel and Penrod with Tostin. As we improve, we'll change things. But training means survival, so we're going to train as hard as we can and still travel. The pace I set, both in training and travel, was brutal. We all lost weight, even the horses. A week of hard traveling saw us roughly 3 days outside of Estien.
Elbow in, Bastia, I called, watching her fight with my sister.
She'd known quite a bit about fighting, proving the reputation of the Cholites was not undeserved, but she hadn't had my aunt as a teacher. Bastia's footwork in particular was still rudimentary, partially because her feet were still tender. Ciara, smaller and younger, was a much better swordswoman. My sister hardly looked like the delicate child she'd seemed in Hirog. Hard muscle shaped her arms and shoulders as he countered one of Bastia's swings.
Penrod tapped me on the shoulder and pointed to Tostin and Oreg's bout.
Frowning, I walked across the camp and observed them.
Like Ciara, Oreg had thrived on our journey. His horsemanship had improved until he could ride most of the horses we had with us.
His fighting was indeed somewhere between mine and Ciara's, but much closer to mine. Watching him fight with Tostin was like seeing 2 flitting shadows, 1 gold, 1 dark. Their hands moved so fast it was hard to follow the action, which was why Penrod had called me over. My brother's fighting had been rusty at first, but he'd quickly improved. It was his attitude that remained a problem. Like everyone else, he'd accepted that Oreg was a bastard relative, but it only seemed to increase his resentment. In truth, Tostin seemed so unhappy, I wondered why he'd chosen to come with us. He barely spoke to anyone except Ciara. Oreg he despised. Had Oreg been a normal boy, I'd have been worried for him. Instead, I worried about Tostin. Oreg was having to work at keeping Tostin's sharp blade away from his body.
Remember, this is practice toast and not an all-out, I called and watched grimly until the fervor of his strokes diminished. Axiel looked up at me from where he was fixing our breakfast and nodded his agreement to my words. Axiel, I said, keeping a wary eye on Tostin and Org, tell me about the siege at Famish Keep.
Not Famish Keep again, gasped Org, ducking my brother's sword. Please, anything but that.
Axiel was a better fighter than even Stala, and under his tutelage I was fast improving. Better yet, he had a firm understanding of army tactics. Penrod was quick and clever. He quite often beat me in training bouts. At every opportunity, I picked their memories for campaign stories about Orenstone, about fighting battles, and about strategies for winning. They teased me about it, but they talked until they were hoarse because I asked it of them. Axiel began with the mistakes the defenders made. I listened and learned. After breakfast and stories, we rode through grasslands all day. The travel was easier on the horses than the rough coastal roads had been, but it was disheartening for the riders. 1 mile looked much like the last and the next. It was difficult to believe we'd ever see Arnstone. After practice and dinner, I stole the last hour before dusk to ride out alone on Pansy as always. Sometimes I used the time for hunting, sometimes I just worked with the stallion, teaching him the kinds of things a warhorse should know, and a few others besides. It kept me fresh and gave me time to be myself, whoever that was. With the others, I was Selig, my legendary hero, borrowing his calmness and leadership abilities, which only Org noticed with quiet sarcasm. And as we approached Estien, I could see them responding to Selig's calm confidence with confidence of their own. Even Org. Only Pansy heard my doubts. So Axiel, I panted, lying on the ground belly first and watching Org run Ciara through her paces. What do you think of us as a mercenary band? Are we big enough, or does someone need to travel to Estien and recruit?
Someone trained him as an assassin,
he replied with a nod in Org's direction. Axiel wasn't nearly as worn out as I, but I gained some satisfaction from his sweat-dampened clothes.
Org, an assassin? I watched the fight more attentively.
I wasn't speaking of Ciara. His tone was dry. He's modified them, but their assassin's moves all the same. Where'd you find him? There can't be many assassin-trained mages scattered about.
He found me, I replied truthfully. He's a Hurig, a bastard, but still a Hurig. I don't know a lot about his background, but I'd be damned if I'll treat him the way my father did.
Ah, said Axiel. After a moment, he said, I don't think we need more men. Hit and run, midnight raids, that's the best work. More skill, less chance.
Less glory, I said, but I suppose I don't have the belly for close-fought battles won against the odds. Stala has seen to that.
Never was a good general who won a close-fought battle, agreed Axiel, somehow managing to imitate my aunt's voice with his bass. I finished the quote. A good general never gets in a close-fought battle. Hit them where they are weak.
Avoid them when they are strong, added Tostin, coming from the fire to sit cross-legged next to me. Hit their supply trains and their payroll. The fight between Org and Ciara degenerated into farce when she broke into giggles at the fierce scowls she was sending her way. The sounds were atonal and odd, but they made me smile. Org hoisted her over his shoulder and spun around until he staggered.
Chapter 6. Estien. Erdrick, Beckram, and Garanon. It was not just my story. Some of it I heard of much later. While we were still approaching Estien, events occurring in the city were to play a major role in what happened later. The treatise he'd borrowed from the king's library would have been enough to keep his attention, but Erdrick found himself too busy trying to ignore the sounds coming from his brother's room next door. He shifted in his bed to get comfortable and turned the page.
"Least they could be quieter about it," he muttered as a particularly shrill cry came through the walls. "It's disgusting. The queen's older than mother."
But much better looking, he had to admit. The sex didn't bother him. He'd been ignoring his brother's mating calls since their mother's maid had first seduced Beckram. It was the thought of his brother's neck under the headsman's axe which worried him, and that was probably the very thing that had led Beckram to the affair in the first place. As usual, Beckram played, and Erdrick fussed over the risks his twin took. Erdrick snorted in self-disgust. He'd almost jumped out of his skin yesterday when the queen mistook him for Beckram. She should have better sense than to try a little hands-on in public. After all, it wasn't only Beckram who would die if the truth came out. Queen's adultery carried the death penalty for both. And Erdrick had squirmed under the king's regard once too often this past week. A man whose most notable accomplishment was the number of farming manuscripts he borrowed from the king's library should not have attracted so much attention unless the king thought he was looking at Beckram. Erdrick had no doubt that the king knew. He tried to warn Beckram, but his brother had just shrugged. Erdrick consoled himself with the thought that he hadn't seen anger in the king's eye, merely speculation. Garanon turned from the softness of his pillow to look at his father's killer and softened his voice.
The word from my estate is that the raiding is getting bad in the west.
Jacobin, High King of the Five Kingdoms of Talvanish Rule, waved a hand indifferently and pushed the embroidered velvet spread to the floor. The Vorsag won't stay there. The land has no value to them. They're raiders, not farmers.
Your Majesty, it is your people they are killing.
Your people and mine. Though his words were imperative, Garanon was careful to keep his voice indifferent as he pulled the linen sheets straight where the bedspread had tugged them.
My boy, purred the king with affectionate dismissal, you worry too much. Go to sleep. You're keeping me from my rest.
Garanon buried his face in his pillow and forced his body to relax. He took his hatred and stuffed it carefully back behind the barriers he'd learned to build years ago, when he'd been dumped in Estien at 12 with his 8-year-old brother to take care of because everyone else was dead, martyrs to the cause of Arnstonian freedom. He'd learned early that lack of caution got you killed. Worse, it got your wife and children raped and killed too. He wouldn't be like his father. He planned and nudged, changing things a little at a time. The cost was more than he could bear. At least his brother was alive and well. Garanon's efforts wouldn't harm his family, only his soul. And his soul hurt now for what he'd done to poor Ward of Hurog. Garanon had destroyed a harmless boy's life, and it had accomplished nothing, because the boy had fled with Cyrnak's slave. If it had been possible, Garanon would have told the king he had not delivered the writ. The king had left it to his discretion. But there were spies among his men, and too many of them knew he'd taken Ward with the intention of delivering him to the asylum. So Ward was a fugitive to be caught and caged, and Garanon had used almost every penny he had to buy his brother's life, if indeed he had. Cyrnak wasn't exactly trustworthy. The gods knew what damage Landislaw would do to Burl, but he wasn't safe here. Tension tightened Garanon's stomach until it burned. King Jacobin had declared Ward unfit, as much to tighten the binding on Garanon as for the gold he'd given the royal treasury. Jacobin didn't care who ruled Hurog, a keep so poor it sent its taxes in kind rather than gold. With the old Hurog Meaton dead, the powerful warrior who'd held everyone in awe, Hurog was of no consequence. But the king would care that Garanon cared. If Garanon spoke up for Ward now, there was a good possibility that Jacobin would have the boy killed. The king was jealous of Garanon's affections, be it for a person or a cause. The sleeping king's arm fell away from him as Garanon wondered if the way he'd chosen was worth anything at all. He certainly hadn't been able to help Orenstone. Whatever he said in public or to Garanon, the king knew that Cariarn wanted all of Orenstone. Jacobin was waiting for Arnstone to fall, so the Vorsag would be forced to attack Talvin and Seaford from the mountain passages, giving the strategic ground to the armies of the kingdoms. It had only been 15 years since the Arnstone Rebellion had been put down. Too many would remember fighting against her to be outraged at a little raiding. It wouldn't be a popular war until Arnstone was swallowed up entirely by the greedy Vorsagian army. Then the kingdom's nobles would be angry and outraged. The strength of righteous indignation would make all the nobles of the 4 remaining kingdoms support Jacobin completely. It was a good strategy, if no one worried about Orenstone. When Garanon sent Landislaw home, he'd given him instructions to begin training men to protect Burl and to evacuate the estate if necessary. If killing the king would have saved Orenstone, Garanon would have killed him long since. But even as a boy, Garanon had known that murdering the king would accomplish nothing but Garanon's own death. It was better to use the king than to die as a murderer, though he was aware his father would not have thought so. But if he had wanted his father's approval, he'd have killed himself like his mother had. If his father could see him playing the king's whore, he would slit his eldest surviving son's throat. Garanon stared at the thick rug on the floor of the royal bedchamber while the king slept. "News, Erdrick," said Beckram, as soon as Erdrick opened the connecting door. The morning light streamed in and hit the parchment Beckram held in his hand. His voice had been so sober, Erdrick expected the royal guards to be waiting at the doorway. "What's wrong?" Beckram tossed the letter toward Erdrick. "You read it." As soon as he saw the script on the pages he picked up off the floor, Erdrick knew it was from his father. He read it twice. "Ward condemned to the asylum. Poor, poor Ward." Erdrick knew what Hurog meant to his cousin, idiot or not. You couldn't be a Hurog and not know how strong the ties of the keep bound all who lived there. The Hurog Meeton had reached up past the grave to hurt his son one last time. The image made him shudder. The late Hurog Meeton had always scared him. "What I want to know is how Father knew that I was sleeping with the Queen," said Beckram aggressively.
"You don't sleep with her," was on the tip of Erdrick's tongue, but his brother didn't deal well with other people's humor, so he said he doesn't say anything about it instead.
"He says he wants me to use my influence on the royal household to get the king to reinstate Ward."
"Time to admit it."
Yes.
"Well, I thought that Father ought to know you were committing the family to treason, so he'd be prepared." Beckram made a hissing sound.
"The king doesn't care about that. She has not borne him or anyone else an heir. He has Garanon and whoever else he can lure to his bed."
"Is that what she told you?"
Beckram gave one of his rare, real smiles, the ones that reminded Erdrick why he loved his twin.
"No, it's what the king told me when he gave me permission to have her."
He leaned back. "Although, permission is the wrong word. It was more in the nature of an order."
Erdrick didn't know whether to be relieved or more worried. The king played deep games. "You'd best be careful."
Beckram nodded dismissively.
"What I don't understand is why Father's so worried about Ward. Everyone knows that Ward is stupid, too stupid to run an estate like Hurog. Even for the Hurog Meet, miser though he was, it was difficult to survive from year to year. Still," he hesitated, "I don't like Ward."
"Because stupid as he is, he reminds you how you should act instead of how you want to act," thought Erdrick. "But I wouldn't want to see him confined to a room in the royal asylum. Could you see it? I think he'd kill someone out of sheer frustration. But surely some compromise can be reached. Father would take him in. Poor Tostin has probably been feeding the fishes for some time, courtesy of our dead uncle, which would leave Hurog to Father."
"Father doesn't want Hurog," Erdrick said, knowing it would be a surprise to his brother. Durug had always verbally accepted the Hurog Meeton's assumption that Hurog was the apex of ambition, no matter what common sense might argue.
"What?" "It frightens him. He says it's cursed. Do you remember Grandfather? Uncle Fenn was worse. He will do his duty, but he really doesn't want it. Do you?"
Beckram thought about it and grimaced.
"Being a Hurog lends a certain air to a person, sort of like owning a man-eating beast. Owning Hurog, though, won't do much for my love life. Can you see any woman wanting to live in that dismal place? And as the senior estate, it would fall to me, while you get Iftahar, which is richer and warmer." He gave an exaggerated shudder. "I'll talk to her."
Beckram shut the door behind him before he let his smile fall away. Though he would have cut his tongue out rather than admit it, he was worried about his affair with the queen, too. The queen's last lover had been found floating face down in the small fountain in the central courtyard, a little fact the court gossips did not speak about. Beckram didn't know what mistake the fool had made, but he was determined not to make the same one. He'd been very careful to stay out of politics. He'd never asked any favors. He never talked to anyone about the queen except for Erdrick, and that didn't count, though, of course, everyone knew. But surely asking her to reinstate Ward wasn't a favor, just the opposite. Hurog wasn't as bad as all that. Not many people would risk their lives to give it away. Risk their lives. Who'd have thought he would risk his life for Ward? Well, he decided as he walked down the corridor to the garden door where the ladies all gathered with their favored gentlemen just before luncheon, he would never tell Ward. Ward liked to hug people who helped him, and Ward's hugs were neither dignified nor gentle. There was a lilt in Beckram's step. Risk his life. He liked that. To Hedra von Talvin, Queen of Talvin and the Five Kingdoms, lay back in her favorite corner of the garden and let her maid fiddle with her hair. The corner was isolated, almost out of view of the rest of the garden, and when she was in it, the rest of the ladies knew to leave her alone. The sweet scent of the blossoming bush she'd never bothered to learn the name of was soothing as her maid's hands. There had been one just like it outside her window at her childhood home, down to the pink tinge on edges of the white petals. With her eyes closed, she could almost hear her mother's scolding voice and her father's deeper, richer tones soothing her. "Ah, my fair one sleeps the morning away." Involuntarily, a smile caught her lips, but she let it widen into something more artificial as she opened her eyes. It would never do for the maid to report that her mistress looked upon her lover with tenderness. "Bekrim, my dear." He smiled and let his eyes roll over her with admiration she suspected was partially true. He might be young, but she had the figure of a woman half her age. She wondered why the king had selected this one for her. Was he trying to test her? Onev hadn't been so young, though he'd been softer, less clever. It hadn't taken a full year before Jacobin had him killed. She hoped Bekrim lasted longer. She wished she could save him, but she'd learned better a long time ago. So she would savor her enjoyment while it lasted and try not to grow too attached. It helped that he never talked of anything but nonsense. The one before Onev had liked sailing. She'd managed to forget his name after he disappeared, but she remembered that. "My love, you make the summer sweet blush and shame." He gestured toward her favorite bush. "Is that what it is?" she asked, startled that she'd just been wondering and he'd answered her unspoken question. She'd remember him now, she thought, every time she saw the bush. He laughed. "I think so, but my brother's the one to ask. What did you do to him, anyway? He was really nervous about you this morning." She fought to keep her public mask on. "Last night we were standing next to each other. I thought he was you. Ridiculous to be embarrassed about it," she told herself. She played her role, and had for longer than this child had been alive. She managed to go on smoothly. "Pinched his rump. I thought he was going to pass out." She rolled her eyes, though she'd been touched by his innocence. Bekrim laughed again, settling himself at her feet with the boneless grace of youth. "He takes things too seriously." He took one of her feet into his hands and rubbed it gently with just enough pressure that it didn't tickle. She said. "That feels good. Where did you learn how to do that?" He half hesitated, losing his own mask for a moment of startled recognition. "From my cousin, Ward," he said at last. "I was 12, and my favorite horse had twisted its leg." No, she thought. She didn't want to know about his family. She didn't want him to be a person, but it was too late. His face was serious, somber almost. "My brother wants to be a farmer," he said. Oh, Erdrick might be a safe topic. There weren't many people more safe than Erdrick, she thought. "And if I inherit my father's estates, we've divided up the duties. He'll farm the land, and I should do the fighting and what politics are necessary." Bekrim squinted against the bright sunlight. He looked so at home outdoors, she thought helplessly. "He is a child of sunlight, and I am the Black Widow who has caught him." She made a neutral noise. "The thing is, that's ruined now." He didn't sound upset about it, so she expected some blithe comment on how her beauty would trap him here so he'd be no good at warfare. She made a more encouraging sound. "The kings declared my cousin Ward unfit to be Hurogmeaton. When they find him, he's to be incarcerated at the asylum." "They can't find him," she remembered Ward. He was simple but kind, a trait she found rare in men. He always danced with the ugliest girls. She couldn't imagine him in the dungeon her husband had created to house the people too important to kill, like the king's youngest brother. Horrible, horrible, she thought. She'd always been afraid that was where she would end up, too. But she'd had a long time to practice her public mask. Her smile never faltered, and her question had carried only polite interest. "No, but he'll turn up." Bekrim hesitated and looked up at her earnestly. All young man, not flirtatious lover. "Could you ask the king to reinstate him? He's stupid, but not insane. That was my uncle." She found herself nodding in agreement, remembering the infamous rages. She fancied her husband had been more than a little afraid of the Hurogmeaton. Bekrim continued, Neither my father nor I want Hurog. It's a nice curiosity to have in the family, but it's damned uncomfortable. I'd rather have my father's current estate, and Erdrick would rather be my manager.
She felt her maid's hands falter in her hair. A terrified stillness grew inside her. Her husband would be curious about such a request. He would want to know what Beckram stood to gain. Even after all these years at court, she could still take a boy's sincerity at face value. But Jacobin would never do that.
Come now, she said, smiling flirtatiously, trying to help him save himself. There has to be a better reason. You must stand to gain something.
She could do it for him, she thought, if he just came up with a better reason. The king had always seen to it that her lovers were well paid for their services.
Beckram shook his head. I just can't stand to think of him confined to a room. He belongs at Hurog.
He gave her a shy smile that made him look half his age.
He's big and slow, but tough.
He touched his eye lightly, for no reason she could see.
He knows every rock on Hurog land, the breeding of every animal on the place. It's his home. After living with Uncle Fenwick, I think he deserves it.
Oh, poor boy, she thought, touching his hair gently. The king will never believe that. Not giving up personal gain for love of a cousin. He'll suspect you of some plan to overthrow him. Hurog had political power, if not wealth, and she remembered that. Jacobin was sure to as well. If Shavig still had a king of its own, it would have been a man of the Hurog family, something the Shavig lords were very aware of. But she had been Jacobin's wife for many years. She smiled.
I'll ask him, of course. But don't get your hopes up too high. He seldom changes his mind because of any request I make. Now go find me something to drink.
He jumped up and bowed low. Queen of my heart, it will be done. Shiera, her maid, continued grooming her after he left, and Tehedra fought not to flinch away. It wasn't the girl's fault that she had to report everything to the king.
Damn the boy for being stupid and getting himself killed.
Garanon fought to keep from rolling his eyes. If the Arnstone contingent at court had looked all year, they couldn't have found a worse person to plead their case than old Havernus. Morning hearings were seldom pleasant for Garanon, but this was more painful than usual.
We are yours, my king, sworn to you by our life's blood, said Havernus.
That oath you take much more seriously than the king, thought Garanon sadly.
Havernus had to know what he was letting himself in for.
Garanon had explained to the Ornstonians that the king would not help them. He tried to warn them that they would only make things worse by pressing, but they'd ignored him. Havernus of Kallus looked like the old warrior he was. He was the only Ornstonian at court with the courage to keep his hair in the fashion of the Ornstone nobles, shaved from temple to ear and cut short everywhere else. Garanon knew Jacobin regarded Havernus as a beaten man, a failure. If Garanon saw instead a hero, was something he would keep to himself. Resolutely, Garanon turned his attention elsewhere. The king held morning business in one of the larger antechambers. The Tamerlane was here this morning, as she often was. She said that it relieved her boredom now that Minogue was deserted. Her yellow and gold mottled body was almost shocking in comparison to all the somberly clad nobles. She was bear-like in size and shape, but more graceful, like a giant forest cat. Her head was more cat-like, too, with mobile features and sharp white fangs, impressive and predatory as the guardian of a god's temple should be. The only discordant note was the extra-long, fluffy tail. He wondered why no one stepped on her in the crowded room as she assured him years ago that he was the only one who could see her. Her imperious yellow eyes met his over the crowd.
"Kallus is besieged, Your Majesty. Surely you must know that these are no raiders. If they take Arnstone, Talvin and Seaford are next."
There was a passionate intensity in Havernus's voice that forced Garanon to turn his attention briefly to the old general. When he looked back, the Tamerlane was gone.
"We're acquainted with the events to the south," agreed the king mildly, "but we are also acquainted with the marvelous abilities of Arnstone fighters. Why, I bet." The ingenuousness of the king's voice made ice crawl down Garanon's neck. He kept his face blank, for there were too many people watching the king's pet Ornstonian for a reaction.
"I bet that with 100 men, you could drive the raiders off yourself."
Havernus knew the king. He bowed low and started to say something when he was interrupted.
"I'll take that bet,"
said a voice Garanon knew well. Though he hadn't seen the king's bastard half-brother in the room,
Alizon Talvin sauntered to Havernus and patted his back. Though I'd rather bet on Havernus's side. Fought against him in the last war, you know.
Alizon might look the fop, but he'd been his father's general and military advisor when he was 22. The king settled back in his chair. The contrast between the two men was startling, especially since their mothers had been sisters. The king looked like all rulers should, strong-faced, gray eyes, cool and measuring. He wasn't handsome, nothing so plebeian. His nose was narrow and aristocratic with a knot where it had been broken once. His curly hair, entirely gray now, though Garanon could remember when it had been chocolate brown, Jacobin kept cut in a short military fashion. Alizon, oldest of the last king's three sons, dyed his hair. Today it was a rich chestnut that spread to his shoulders. He was tall and wolf-lean, moving with comical grace. It was hard to imagine him leading an army. He had stepped down from his official post when his half-brother ascended the throne. Personally, Garanon thought that was the reason Alizon had escaped the fate of Jacobin's youngest brother, who was in the king's asylum.
"You would like to bet that Havernus and 100 can drive the raiders out?" asked Jacobin, amused.
"With the help of the Ornstone natives," agreed Alizon. "I think, too, that the choice of the 100 should be his alone."
The king chuckled, and Garanon leaned toward the belief that Jacobin was honestly amused.
"What's the bet?"
"My war stallion against grandfather's sword."
Garanon saw the king tense with his first real interest. Jacobin had coveted Alizon's horse.
"Done," agreed the king. "Callus may choose any 100 men he wishes. If they can drive the Vorsagian raiders back behind their borders in the next 6 months, I will give you grandfather's sword. If not, you will give me the war horse, True Blood."
"Upon Havernus's acceptance, of course," murmured Alizon. They had managed to turn the old warrior's plea to farce, thought Garanon, playing games with a man's honor.
"I accept your wishes, as I am sworn to do."
There was dignity in the old man's bearing. Garanon hoped that everyone saw it. Being of Arnstone was something to make him proud when there were Arnstonians like this. His father would have approved of Havernus.
"He's a brave man," murmured the king, looking at Garanon.
Horror knotted his belly, and a small voice inside started gibbering. "The king knows, the king knows." But there was nothing for the king to know. He'd done nothing for Arnstone. The only thing the king could know that would harm Garanon was still secret. Only Garanon knew how much he hated the king.
"He has more courage than most,"
Garanon let admiration color his voice.
"It's too bad that such a man is also a fool. He allows his love of Arnstone to blind him to the needs of the Five Kingdoms. Best to send him to Arnstone. He will never fight as hard for anything but his homeland."
Gratefully, he saw the king's sharp gaze grow bored, though Havernus flushed at being so described publicly. Jacobin turned to his lawbringer.
"Record the decision in Alison's bet. Oh, give the man a week to make his choices and supply. We shall fund the supplies. When you are through, I will hear the next claimant."
While the king conducted the rest of the morning's business, Garanon studied the room, wondering if the world had ever been right and fair the way he'd once thought it was. Where the men of honor gone, in the fading shadow of the hours, where the shield, the sword, the steed, to fight where coward's hero cowers. The sorrowful little tune drifted through his mind, something he'd heard at an inn somewhere in that stupid chase for an elusive slave girl. Coward's hero. He liked that. It described him perfectly.
Stupid of Jacobin to give the old bastard free rein like that.
The soft light of the moon only seemed to make the shadowed garden darker. Garanon turned his head, unsurprised to see the Tamerlane lounging on one of the decorative railings that served as support for a variety of climbing vines. The marble railing seemed to bow under the weight of the creature. If she hadn't spoken, he knew his eyes would have passed her by, though she wasn't concealing herself. The brightly mottled fur, so startling in the daylight, blended perfectly in the jungle-like shadows of the garden. A mythological, magical beast who'd showed herself to a frightened boy for reasons he'd never understood. Boredom, she'd told him when he'd asked. The Tamerlane was the guardian of Minog, but no one believed in her anymore, especially since Minog had been destroyed. She'd once said Minogue's fall had been fated, though her tail had snapped like an angry cat's while she said it. With travelers to Athervon's broken temple so few, she interested herself in the doings of the Estian court and the king's Orinstonian lover. "The king's stupid. Why do you say that?" he asked, knowing that they were alone in the gardens by her relaxed manner. She rolled over on the handspan wide rail and twisted, rubbing her spine against the hard surface without losing her balance.
"Why is it that Orinstone cannot defend herself against the Vorsag, though she's done it before?"
"Because the progression of that thought caused him to hesitate briefly. The lords, who should be at their seats, are stuck here in Estian and have been since the end of the last war. But it's not that easy, Tamerlane. It's been 15 years. There are no trained men on the estates because we're not allowed to have armies. Most of the experienced lords were killed then or by later mysterious means. The only reason Havernus hasn't fallen off his horse or been mistaken for a deer while he rides out in the woods is because there's not a duplicitous bone in his body. Not even a patriotic idiot would recruit him for an underground movement because he'd tell the king as soon as the words reached his ears.
Many men will follow him in war, she purred soothingly. He is a hero, and perhaps not as absurdly honorable as you believe. And there are others here. You, for instance.
He's not likely to choose me after I embarrassed him in public like that.
Perhaps not,
she allowed, flipping herself off the rail and onto her padded feet. Her claws clicked on the brick walk.
But your question was, why the king is a fool? Think what will happen if Havernus succeeds with his 100 men. All of the 5 kingdoms will know that it was spite that made the bet. Everyone loves an underdog who triumphs. It might be enough to shake his grip on the throne. If I had been the king, I would have killed Alizon long ago. Intelligent men are dangerous.
Why do you care so much? He asked suddenly. What do the events here matter to you?
She changed suddenly, as he'd seen her do only once before. A human seemingly rose out of the bulk of her animal body. Her skin was dappled as her pelt had been, otherwise she could have been any other naked woman he'd ever seen. Even her eyes had changed to a warm amber. It surprised him again how young she looked. If she'd been human, he'd have said that she was less than 20.
The Tamerlane stepped forward and touched his cheek.
The time is coming, Garanon of Burrell. It has been dark for a very long time, not just here, but among the other creatures of magic. The dwarves have huddled down in their reaches, but disease and disharmony are rife among them. Something tainted the magic of the land long ago. Now the land may be saved.
Defeating the Vorsag will change the taint? He asked. She had spoken often of tainted magic, but never so specifically.
She smiled. I don't know, but it might. The future is hard to divine, even for Athervon.
Athervon? Garanon looked at her in surprise.
Just because Minogue lies in ruin does not mean that Athervon forgets his promises.
The Tamerlane lowered her eyes, looking more cat than bear.
In return for giving his followers Minogue, Athervon promised the High King to look after his kingdom.
Her eyes went unfocused briefly as she sniffed the air.
He is coming.
She took up her more usual shape again and gave him her usual words of parting.
Fare thee well, child.
Uncertain what he should do with what she told him, Garanon sat on the rail she'd occupied and brushed at a chipped area with his thumb.
Garanon, said Jacobin.
I remember you sitting just so when you first came to me. What makes you so sad?
Garanon sat upright, though the king's hand encouraged him to lean back against Jacobin's shoulder. Enough lies, he thought. They wouldn't work anyway.
Orinstone, my liege.
His answer displeased Jacobin. The hand on his shoulder tightened.
Your father abandoned you to fight for Orinstone's freedom. Abandoned you so there was no one to defend you when the soldiers came. Killed your sister in front of your eyes. And they raped you. And your brother, didn't they? If your father had followed his oaths, he would have been there to save you.
From you, thought Garanon with sudden violence. For a moment he was terrified he had said the words aloud, but the king's hold softened. "You were so hurt when you came to me," Jacobin murmured. "So small and terrified. It hurt me to see you, to see the fear in your face. So I made it better." He nuzzled Garanon's neck. Not fooled by the lover-like tones, Garanon knew the reminder of what had happened had been deliberate, especially the reminder of his brother's fate. But his brother was in Arenstone, safe from Jacobin. Perhaps, he thought, while his body responded to the king's caresses, perhaps he would join Avernus. It would be good to see his wife and lands again. Chapter 7. Wardwick. Athervon has always been a curious problem for devout Talvins. If he was really a god, why did he allow the destruction of his temple? Fortunately, most Talvins are not given to worship anything except gold, so on the whole, they aren't much troubled. "Tell me again why we're traveling so close to Estian, Ward," said Tostin, swinging his sword my way.
"Because the best path through the mountains is straight south," I replied, parrying. "From what you said, Garanon has given up finding his brother's runaway. He'll have taken the faster road to Estian, so we won't meet him." We were doing patterns he and I had practiced since we could hold a sword. Stala encouraged talk during patterns, said that engaging the mouth demanded the body operate from reflex. I wasn't certain of that, but I did know I didn't have to worry about him missing a link in the pattern.
"Think we'll reach Estian today?" asked Tostin, increasing the speed of his strokes, so I had to as well.
"Should," I increased my speed a little more than he had. "Wouldn't traveling have been faster if we practiced less?" he said with a gasp, but he set the pace even faster. "Yes, but we need to be ready by the time we reach Arnstone," I managed all that without a breath and matched his speed too. I added, "I don't want anyone killed, because they don't know how to handle a sword." To make up for the loss of breath, I quickened again. From the corner of my eye, I saw the others had stopped fighting to watch.
"Why does Ward look faster?" I heard Bestia ask.
"Because he is," Axiol's voice carried satisfaction like a proud father's. "He's a longer distance to move to meet Tostin's blows. That's why a big man is almost always slower than a small man."
"It always surprises me to see Ward fight," added Orig. "He always talks slowly, sounds almost stupid, even when he's not trying to appear that way. Moves that way, too."
"No," Axiol disagreed. "He just moves well. It usually makes him look slow, like Penrod's gelding. Fastest horse in the bunch, but he looks as if he's traveling half the speed of the others." He raised his voice.
"Ward, Tostin, slow down. Someone's going to get hurt."
"Want to really show them?" asked Tostin, grinning. The expression took me aback. He'd never been given to a quick smile.
"What do you have in mind?"
"It would have to be quick because I couldn't keep the pace up much longer."
"Close your eyes."
Stala had us do that. We all used wooden blades and full armor so that, barring total incompetence, the worst risk was a nasty bruise. Usually she blindfolded only one of the sparring partners and the patterns were taken at half speed.
"You too?" I asked.
He closed his in answer. So I did also, and neither of us slowed the pattern. The worst thing about closing my eyes was that it always threw my balance off until I got used to it. On the other hand, it increased my focus immeasurably. The greatest sensory input came from my sword, until I almost felt like Tostin's sword was hitting my arm instead of the silver blade. It was exhilarating, better than running down the cliffside on feather, and about as smart.
We kept it up until I heard a raggedness in the rhythm of metal on metal. One or both of us was tiring.
"Done on three," I whispered.
"One," he said as softly.
"Two," I replied.
"Three," he said. I jumped back out of range and opened my eyes to see that he had done the same. Dizzy with the sudden addition of sight to my heightened senses, I had to sit on the ground before I fell.
"Idiots," said Axiol. "That kind of horseplay will get you killed."
Tostin and I exchanged unrepentant grins, and I felt the old bond of brotherhood settle over us for the first time in a long while. Our attitude didn't help Axiel's temper.
"I told Stala that blindfolding was stupid. It encourages the Staren to do stupid stunts like that display."
Feeling less dizzy, I rolled back to my feet and held out my sword to Axiol, as a repentant student is supposed to do. He shook his head in refusal, but gave me a reluctant chuckle.
"I wouldn't have missed it for all the sheep in Hurog, but don't you tell anyone."
"What is a Staren?"
asked Oreg with such innocence in his voice that I looked at him sharply. He was pointing out something to me, but I didn't know what it was.
Foolish young boys, answered Axiel with such well-concealed discomfort I might not have noticed without Oreg sharpening my attention.
I knew several languages as any lord who lived in the kingdoms had to. Steren wasn't a word I was familiar with.
Fretsome old dwarf, taunted Oreg softly.
Axiel's face set, but before he could say anything, Tostin jumped in, as he did at every opportunity, to attack Oreg.
Poor mannered bastard, he said. You need to show respect to your elders.
A look of unholy glee spread across Oreg's face.
Time to break camp, Axiel said abruptly.
It was the first order he'd given outside of the morning and evening exercises. It might have been to keep Oreg and Tostin from fighting, but I wondered if it was Oreg's remark about dwarves. I thought about pursuing the matter, but reluctantly decided to leave Axiel to his own counsel. He'd earned that much by his long years of service to my family. Besides, I never liked playing someone else's games, not even Oreg's. Just how unlikely was it that Axiel's father was a dwarf? About as unlikely as Oreg being as old as Hurog. I could accept dwarven blood. It was the other part that I would choose to disbelieve. When he was really, really drunk, he claimed his father was the dwarven king.
Pansy was feeling good and showed it by dancing and snorting. The warm sun felt good to me as well, and for the first time since leaving Hurog, I started to feel normal again. My broken bond with Hurog still made me feel like I was missing some vital part of myself, but it was bearable, a healed-over scar of a missing limb.
My lord, said Oreg diffidently, riding to my side.
Yes?
Where did you intend to camp tonight? We won't reach Estien until late this afternoon.
The trail we're on meets up with the main road in a few miles. My father liked to ride into Estien in the morning. I thought we'd just camp where we always have and ride past the city tomorrow.
Is it possible to camp at Minog instead? In the interest of a scholarly visit? Asked Bastia, who was riding beside me.
Oreg gave her a pleased smile and nodded his head. Bastia had blended into my odd group much better than I had expected a beautiful woman to do. She was, I think, sleeping with both Axiel and Penrod, but managed it without friction.
Minog is northeast of Estien. It's at least 5 or 6 miles out of our way, I said. That means over 10 miles altogether.
I know, he replied. I'd still like to stay there overnight. You told Tostin that speed isn't important.
The ruins are haunted. The track was wide enough here for Tostin to come up on my right. Axiel knows all the stories. He's scouting, but I'm sure he'll be happy to tell us all about it tonight.
His tone was congenial. Something about this morning's sparring had made him happier.
Haunted? I put some tremolo in my voice and managed not to glance at Oreg. I'd forgotten about that. Maybe we shouldn't stay there after all.
Tostin humphed.
You needn't fake it, Ward, he grinned at Bastia. I could see she'd worked her magic on him as well. We've a ghost at Hurog, too. I've never seen it, but you should have heard my aunt, Lady Durach, not state when it visited her.
Bastia hadn't met Stala, but she'd heard us all telling stories.
It's easier to dismiss ghosts in the daylight, I said. Not so easy at night when the ruins come alive around you.
Penrod had ridden up to see what was going on.
Ruins?
Oreg wants to stay in the haunted ruins of Minog, explained Bastia.
The old horseman grinned.
Spend the night in haunted ruins. Sounds like home.
It was Axiel who found the path we needed to take. I would have ridden right past it. There were signs of the great road it had been, but I doubted there would be any trace in another 100 years. Rumors of hauntings and curses had kept the curious away. And to think that Talvanish were so quick to point fingers at us Northlanders for being superstitious. Truthfully, had I not known what Oreg was, I would not have agreed to it. As my uncle had said, no one knew like a Northlander how bothersome real magic was. Neither Axiel nor Bastia showed much enthusiasm, but Tostin practically brimmed over with excitement, which was what had finalized my decision. This was the most cheerful I'd seen him.
Our path twisted between trees that hadn't been there during Minogue's reign, but now towered over us, shadowing the path. Blackberry brambles hid the remnants of broken stone benches and statuary. The
The horses were tired after a full day of riding, and they huffed and sweated, hauling us up the steep hill. Penrod kicked his feet loose of the stirrups and slid off. Axial, ahead of him, and Ciara, beside him, followed suit. I laughed a bit at myself as I slid out of the saddle because I didn't want to walk up the hill very much, but if Penrod, who looked as fresh as he had this morning, though he was at least twice my age, was walking up the hill, then so was I. The moment my feet hit the soil, I stopped laughing, as the hair on my arms rose and goose flesh covered my body. It wasn't the same here as it had been at Hirug. The magic in the hill didn't flow through me like the sea, filling the hollows in my soul, but it was definitely here, and it was curious. I don't know why I thought that. I'd always been taught that magic was a force like the wind or the sun, but at Hirug, the magic welcomed me, filling me with strength and peace when I needed it, though it didn't answer my call anymore. But whatever touched me through the soft dirt under my feet was inquisitive and not that welcoming. Oreg stepped beside me and gripped my elbow, pulling me forward before the others had realized I'd stopped. "Yes," he murmured quietly so the jingle of harness and clomp of hooves would cover his voice. "You feel it, don't you? Bastia doesn't. How curious." "It's like Hirug," I murmured back. He smiled grimly. "Yes and no. They are both places of old power." "What power?" asked Tostin, coming alongside as he frequently did when Oreg and I talked, though he seldom addressed Oreg directly. "Minogue," I answered, nodding my head to the ruins that rose darkly above us. Tostin rubbed his arms and said, "This place makes me nervous, as if something not very friendly is watching us."
"Come on, hurry up," called Bastia. "You're blocking the trail. If we've got to camp on this forsaken hill, let's at least make camp while we've light to do so."
I glanced back and saw that Bastia, unencumbered by pride, was still mounted. But I quickened my pace without a word. She was right. Walking put a stop to my inquiries for lack of breath, something I'd have felt badly about except that no one else could talk either. When the slope began to get steeper, I let my reins loose on Pansy's back and dropped back to use his tail to help me over the rough stuff. It was an old mountaineer's trick, and I forgot until I grabbed his tail that Pansy wasn't used to such familiarity. But when he didn't kick and kept following Penrod, I quit worrying and gratefully accepted his help. Glancing back, I saw Tostin had done the same, though Oreg scrambled up without apparent effort. Bastia had dismounted at last and fallen behind. Feather, bearing a lighter burden than she was used to, hauled Ciara past us as if she were walking on the flat. The crest of the hill loomed ahead like a beacon in a snowstorm. Pansy felt it too, or maybe it was the humiliation of having Feather pass him, and increased his pace until I had to jog to keep up with him. Though the top of the hill was still light, trees shadowed the path, and I stumbled over the rough ground. Rather than have Pansy drag me the rest of the way up, I let go of his tail and caught a broken stone pillar that was part of the ruins. I woke up flat on my back with a stranger leaning over me. He wore none of the tattoos of our order, nor were his robes familiar. There was something about his face. He looked like a Hirug. I saw a dragon in the sky, fierce and frightening, deep blue scales edged in gold. Hirug. It was Tostin who leaned over me, his eyes concerned.
"Are you hurt? Ward, what happened?"
It seemed like a good question, but tingling from toes to forehead, I didn't have an answer. I must not have been there long, because I heard Oreg and his horse approaching in a rush.
"What's wrong?"
asked Oreg.
"I tripped," I said,
though it had been the pillar, not whatever I'd stepped on, that laid me out. I forced a quick grin.
"Just feels so good to lie here on the grass. Thought I'd stay here a while."
Noticing that my hand was still touching the base of the stone, I pulled it away. Blessedly, the pulsing tingle faded within a few heartbeats. Nothing hurt except my head.
"Nothing's wrong," I said, rolling to my feet. My head bumped into Pansy's, which did neither of us any good, and he stepped back indignantly. "Let's get to the top."
I hoped the shadow hid my